Taking a look now at weather and climate with Steve Ackerman, professor and director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. John Martin usually joins us. John chairs the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Studies at UW. But according to my sources, he is in the air flying.
He is in the air returning from sending off their first kid to college.
Oh!
Yes, so I'm sure him and his wife are consoling each other about them.
Oh, boy. Okay, so and that's out east somewhere.
That's east, yeah, New York. He's going to someplace in New York. New York University, I think.
Okay, so. Well, they're probably a little trepidation there. And, of course, he can't call from the plane, so.
No, he can. That's why, yeah. It probably would have been good for him to actually be here and talk weather rather than think about how much they're going to miss their daughter.
And how much it's going to cost.
And how much is it going to cost, yes.
Oh, well, they'll have good weather for flying, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you know, we've had some great days for flying in the sense if you want to see the ground. We've had some really big, clear spots over the upper Midwest and almost all the way down the Mississippi Valley, almost down to Texas, not quite. But.
Well, we spent, Renee and Emily and I spent the weekend in Door County, and it was just beautiful in Door County, nice breeze, and temperature's a little warm, but nothing compared to what we apparently had in the Madison area, in Milwaukee area.
Yeah, I guess it was warm. I've been out on the East Coast.
So we bailed out.
Right. We're like, it's going to get hot. It's going to get muggy. I'm going to leave here.
Oh, man. Well, July 30th marked the 11th anniversary of the highest dew point on record in Milwaukee. Speaking of Milwaukee, it was 82.
Oh, yeah. That's...
You think that's is that the highest dew point measured in Wisconsin?
You know, I don't know what the record is with regard to the highest. There was a lot of email discussions back between the weather nerds in the end of July, beginning of August, because lacrosse was running a good streak of dew points running in the 60-degree range continually for like a 30-35-day stretch, which is also pretty rare.
Now, for those who, all right, what is the dew point for those who aren't familiar?
The dew point is, you know, if you go out on a fall day, because that's when it usually happens, and you walk in the grass and you get your feet wet, that's dew that's formed. And so the dew point officially is the temperature to which the air has to be cooled at constant pressure in order for dew to form. So the definition of dew point has dew in it. But basically, I like to think of it as it's not just the dew point, but it's also the temperature. And when the dew point and the temperature are high, that means the relative humidity is going to be high.
Yeah.
And if the dew point gets above 70, at least for me, it gets muggy. Some people like it in the 70s and it doesn't get muggy up until the 80s. So. Yeah,
yeah, my wife likes it that way.
And so does mine. I don't know. Must be some, I don't. I like dew points in the low 60s, which we've had. I guess it was a couple of days ago. We had it out here in the 60s. So it was warm but not too bad. In fact, we went to Irish Fest in Milwaukee, and the dew points then were in the low 60s. And that wasn't so bad because it was up in the 80s and you're in the sun and it feels warm, but it doesn't have that deep, muggy feeling.
Steve Ackerman, our guest. By the way, you can join in with your weather or climate question. I don't know that I gave the number. Let me do that right now. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Well, that dry air mass that's rolling in is destroying the chances for record-setting wet summers in some places in the state.
Yeah, we've had a good precipitation year, and you can tell that in terms of lakes. Many of the lakes are, you know, coming back to normal or above normal. I know our chain of lakes is generally above normal. But I was talking to some good forecasters before coming over here, and they're worried about that front getting stalled. Now, they haven't totally predicted that yet, and they're actually looking at it in terms of the impact on Hurricane Earl, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. that if it does stall up, then that may allow Hurricane Earl actually to get closer to the East Coast than what is currently predicted.
Oh, yeah. So that's not good.
Right, not good for the East Coast. If you like humid weather and dew points in the upper 60s, 70s, then it's good. Right? But if you like us and like the drier weather, then it's not so good.
Well, we had official reporting stations in the state reporting at least 14 inches of summer rainfall. Milwaukee, Madison, La Crosse, Wausau, Green Bay have recorded 17 to 21 inches.
Inches, yeah. Yeah, this has been a quite... And if you remember, a lot of that was at the beginning of the summer.
Right.
The last week or so, you know, it's been pretty really dry and really almost cloudless the last few days.
But it's good to see more rainfall in the north.
Yes, yeah. I mean, look at the drought conditions, it's a lot of that area that was under drought conditions for the last year or so is now out of drought conditions. There's still areas up in the upper peninsula area that are still having a problem.
Don't, but yeah. Well, Ted in Plover has a question or comment. Hi, Ted.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, as long as we're talking about rain, I have a question about rain gauges and actually how they're calibrated. You can see the round ones, and you can see some that are tapered. And there's people that will say, yeah, I left a drink outside overnight and had 2 inches of water in it, and that can't be the same that's falling in that little one-inch tube. Is it? And
yeah.
if there's a 30-mile-an-hour wind blowing, isn't it going to keep more rain out of the gauge? I mean...
Yeah.
Measuring rain is a really difficult problem. And so, yeah, if it's not windy out and you have a nice steady rain and that rain gauge measures 2 inches, then, yeah, that's representative of the rainfall that did fall. But as you're pointing out, a lot of times when it rains, we have wind. And that could either keep rain from getting in or adding extra rain in. And so if you actually go to some of the National Weather Service offices, one of the things you'll see around the rain gauges is they have metal structures that are below the top of the rain gauge so they don't interfere with that.
Yeah.
That actually try and calm the wind down in that area to try and... keep wind effects from happening.
So they build a little cage around it?
Yeah, they build a little cage around it. Yeah. And actually, snowfall then is even harder to measure. and they try and do it again with these rain gauges and then just melt it. But if you want to try and minimize the wind effects, they do have snow gauges that are... Big instruments that seem to be out in the middle of the field in terms of, again, trying to set up barriers to slow down the wind so you reduce the amount of precipitation that's kind of blown into the gauge.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, so actually the rain gauges you buy at your local store or whatever are fairly accurate.
Yeah. I mean, the instrumentation is really simple, and actually the calibration of it is actually really simple too because it's just a tube.
Yeah.
But the problem is that Mother Nature doesn't really cooperate with...
Yeah. There you go. Thanks.
Alrighty.
Thanks, Ted.
Yep.
Phil in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Phil.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a question about a rainbow. At either end, there's supposed to be a pot of gold.
Mm-hmm.
We were fishing on Legend Lake up in Shawano there, and... 1,000 feet each side of us is where it landed in the lake. Should I have dove down 40 feet to find my pot of gold or what?
I think you should have dove down, but I don't think you would have found a pot of gold. I think you would have just found some goldfish.
That's not what I was looking for.
Yeah, no, that's too bad.
It was a spectacular sight, though.
Oh, it is a spectacular.
So how big is that lake? I'm not quite familiar with that lake.
Legend Lake's on the reservation up there. It's a couple of miles long.
Oh, okay. So
either side of the boat, 1,000 feet away from us, that landed into the water on either side.
Oh, that's great.
Spectacular to see.
Did you boat over and try to fish at the end of that?
We were pretty close to the one side of it, and no, the fish weren't biting.
Okay. Now, of course, if you did try and move, you would find that the rainbow would continue. Right. It moves away from you. So.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Thanks, Phil.
Well, that's all I've got. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Oh, good call. That was fun. Carol in Thiensville, on to you. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Steve, it's Carol Rosenberg.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm having extended vacation because my school got flooded in the great rain event of July 22nd.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
And how bad was the flood? Was it like
Oh, it was very bad. I mean, we're down in a hollow, and they were working on the highway above the school. And normally, we can get a bunch of rain down there and have some minor flooding. But this year, with working on the highway, the drains on the highway were not working, so the water just literally poured off I-43 down into the athletic field, over the wall, and into the school. And we had like 6 feet of water in the basement at various times. And happily, my classroom's on the second floor, but I understand that I got new tile because of the dampness from the rest of the building drying out caused my old tile, which was very old tile, to lift up. So yeah. I got new tile out of the deal. Whether everything else is safe, now I'm not so sure.
Wow, yeah. I mean, I think the building's probably structurally safe.
Oh, yeah.
But the other issue would be mold and things like that, that they didn't clear it out quickly. But
that's right, and that's why we don't have school today. We should have been in school today. I should have been seeing my freshmen this morning and finishing up preparations. Well, we're not being allowed back into the building until the end of next week because of the restoration. So,
I've heard of snow days before, but never rain days.
Yeah, this is the after the deluge days is what I'm calling them.
Wow.
Yeah. So, other than always having to call you at least once a summer and say hi, I was wondering about those kind of rain events that have created these really these intense rain events that we've had this year. It seems like there've been a lot more of them. Has anybody done any study on the frequency of intense rain events like we've seen?
Downpours.
Yeah, there have been some groups looking at the frequency of heavy rainfall events. And I can't remember the exact statistics, but they're generally finding that the number of events seems to be increasing in the over the last 50 years.
But I'm not going crazy.
No. Yeah, you're not going crazy. But be careful how you judge it, too, because in your case, as you were pointing out, it's not just the rain. It was also there was nothing to catch it, which you've had in the past.
There you go.
Good
luck with your classes.
Hi to everybody over at Sims. Always nice to hear you on the air.
All right, will do. Thanks, Carol.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at the University of Wisconsin, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at weather and climate today with Professor Steve Ackerman of the UW-Madison, Larry Mueller here. Thank you for listening in. Call in with your weather questions at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to John in Germantown.
Hey, Larry, how are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I'm actually driving through the Coulee Country up to La Crosse, and it's a beautiful light cumulus clouds. Beautiful blue day. But it's warm, and I'm like you. I like it down about 50, in the mid-50s for the humidity. I was going to say I drive quite often. I go up to the middle of the state, and this spring, Woodruff, Minocqua area, the Channel Lakes, was so low. It had to be 2 feet low. Have those recovered?
They're back.
With all this rain?
I think so. I think I know that they were down low at the beginning of the season, but we've been getting above-average precipitation through most of the area.
I think they're pretty
good. Right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is my mother's house, she has a beautiful maple in the front yard, and she's had some problems with it. And what we found was we had our arborist send it into the extension, and her maple is suffering a real heavy dose of powdery mildew, and they're finding that to be very typical this year because of the high humidity, and you don't have your trees cleared up and cleaned up so the sun can get in there and dry those out. It's a problem.
Yeah, powdery mildew is huge across the state this year, and it's affecting not only maples but a lot of vegetables and a lot of trees and shrubs. And you're right, if your shrubs and that are so densely packed and haven't been properly pruned, you're going to have it probably.
Right, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling.
So that's the disadvantage of having too much rain, besides flooding.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Bob in Madison, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thank you. And I just hear on the radio a talk of, 20, 30 years of increasing days that are going to be hot. And then I also recently hear of Lake Superior temperatures rising and the lake not freezing adequately last year. And then the drought in northwestern Wisconsin. I'm just wondering if, as far as, is there a dynamic there and what the long-term consequences might be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question, particularly with regard to the drought in the northwest Wisconsin. Because, I mean, if you look at the warming trends that we've been having over land, that would be consistent with the warming trends that we're seeing with regard to Lake Superior waters, as you're pointing out, as well as ice conditions on lakes, whether they're big or small. But one thing nobody that, to my knowledge, has figured out is why has the northwest up until recently, part of Wisconsin, been really dry? Why have the systems just not been there for precipitation? So we don't know.
We haven't figured it out.
We haven't figured that out yet. I mean, the good news is that it's raining there again. So, but yeah, I'm not sure what the connection is that's driving that trend that we saw probably over the last, probably about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years has been consistently down, but up this year.
It's back up this year, yeah.
Tony and Madison, on to you. Hi, Tony.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have noticed recently the weather stations, the local news, when they have their weather, they're now using the dew point. They no longer tell me what the humidity is. I understand humidity, I'm less clear on a dew point. And I wonder why that is, and maybe I need an education on why a dew point is a relative number and is being used. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good question, and I'm disappointed that they would be doing that, because I always tell everybody you need all three. You need the temperature, the dew point, and the relative humidity, because a dew point temperature, of 70 degrees really doesn't tell you much unless you know either what the temperature is or what the relative humidity is. So I'm kind of surprised, but if they're not telling you the relative humidity, then what I would do is look at what we call the dew point depression, and that is what's the difference between the temperature and the dew point. And if those things are close together and it's a warm day, then it's going to be a muggy day.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's kind of disappointing. I'm kind of surprised that they would stop dropping that.
Yeah, that's something you ought to shoot an email into your weather person or people that you watch.
Yeah,
on
we work a lot with both Channel 30 and Channel 15 people. So I'll take obviously I don't watch television weather very much. I just go to our sites and get the data and interpret it myself.
Joe in West Bend asks, "What's the significance of tower-mounted windmills?" Kind of in quotes, that are located at various overpasses on highways.
If I'm thinking about what he means by windmills in quotes, is I think they're the Department of Transportation weather stations, particularly if they're on overpasses and bridges. They want to know what the wind speed is, how fast it's going, to give advisories to trucks and things like that. They probably also have visibility probes on them that you probably can't see from the roadway to measure fog. And if they're near a roadway, they're probably also measuring not just the air temperature and humidity, but probably also the soil temperature to try and get an idea if the roads are frozen or how cold they are.
So they're sort of in the weather business, too, in a way.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, the weather business are the National Weather Service and NOAA in general, the Department of Transportation and the FAA. And actually, I may be bold and say we are all in the weather business, right? Because weather affects everything we do.
Well, Jane emailed us and wonders about the use of the term mild in weather forecasts. What does it mean when a forecaster says it'll be mild tomorrow? Does it matter whether this statement is made in July or November?
It sure does matter when it's being made. I don't like those terms really, because as we were just talking about with regard to muggy, muggy's different to us than it is to our wives, and certainly mild is going to be the same thing, and it's certainly going to depend on whether or not you're talking about July or January. I guess you have to think about when weather forecasters use that term, and usually you're going to see that on television. I don't think you're ever going to see a National Weather Service employee say, "Oh, it's going to be a mild day today." They're going to define what they mean by mild in terms of temperature and winds and precipitation.
And Bill in Appleton says, "I've seen quite a few water spouts and hay devils. He calls them dust devils.
Dust devils.
I would think. Could you tell us how these events form and what they might indicate about the upcoming weather in an area?"
That's a good question, because they're kind of different. When you see these dust devils or hay devils, usually you're going to see them when it's kind of hot and clear outside.
Yeah.
So that's what that's going to tell you. The water spouts are often associated with convective type precipitation in the area. They're not tornadoes. They form a little bit different than tornadoes. I mean, they're generally not as severe as tornadoes, though they sure look nasty, and I wouldn't exactly run a big boat into it. But
no.
If you do, if a big boat gets hit by one of those things, it's not like it's going to tear it apart like a tornado would. And again, I don't think it portends anything about the weather other than what you could already surmise by looking up and seeing these convective clouds all around you.
Well, you mentioned tornado, and that reminded me, often people talk, well, we're protected here by tornadoes in Madison because of the lakes. But I was at an author on last week who was a fisherman, and he was talking about a tornado that tore right across a lake in northern Wisconsin. And unfortunately, he was out in the his dad was in the water with a couple of clients, and they got almost ashore, jumped out of the boat, got in the water, and hung onto the side of the boat in shallower water. But they watched the tornado catch up to another boat and capsize it.
Wow.
This is some years back, and several people died. So
yeah, I mean, once tornadoes form, there ain't anything on the ground that's going to stop them. They're not going to, you know, say, oh, there's a lake, I don't want to get wet, or they're not going to skip over a mound. So,
yeah, they'll go right across the water. Judy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I know that the hurricanes in the Gulf affect our weather, but I wonder if you could flesh that out for me a little bit. Like, how long after a hurricane am I worried about hot and humid?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. And as you're going to guess, I mean, it's going to really depend on what the overall big weather pattern is. Because sometimes it won't affect us at all. If the big weather pattern is basically going to take the air from the moist air, generally is what we're worried about, the moist air coming from the hurricanes and take it to the East Coast, that's one thing. Or on the other hand, it could take it up the Mississippi Valley. And that may take about a day or two before that real moisture-laden air reaches our area. And what that'll do is just lead to heavy precipitation. And that happened about a year ago.
It gets landfall, then it's a couple of days after landfall?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Yep.
And that happened a couple of years ago, and I'm trying to remember the hurricane that was with, and I'm spacing out on it.
There you go. Thank you, Judy, for calling. And, oh, good, Rob in Eagle River's got a comment on the drought in the Eagle River area, and I don't think it's over yet.
No, it's not. There are still parts of Vilas and Oneida that we really need the rain. Bring it on. Most of the lakes have come back very nicely, but a lot of the smaller runoff lakes are still hurting. So if you have any connections at all with Mother Nature, bring it on.
More. All right, need more, but not too much at one time. Right?
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Rob. I'm glad you called.
Yeah.
Jane and Tomahawk, we're on to you now. Hi, Jane.
Hi, I have a similar situation as the previous caller. And to answer the caller you had from the Cooley area.
Yeah.
Although I live in Tomahawk now, we still have our home on the lake in the town of Woodboro. And that's sort of in a triangle between Rhinelander, Minocqua, and Tomahawk. And it's a seepage lake, 35 acres, and it's still down a good foot.
Yeah.
We don't have any streams into it, and so the reservoirs around here are filling up, but like the last caller said, the little ones are...
And it was down as low as maybe 2 feet?
Oh, gosh, it was. I wasn't even down there. I know our dock was out of water, and now it's...
Now it's come back a
coming
bit.
Coming up a little.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. You're right, because we've been having a lot of precipitation, so lakes that are fed by streams and runoff are doing okay, but as you're pointing out, the ones that really depend on the water underground, those aquifers still need to be recharged.
Right.
Good point.
Okay.
Thanks,
Jane.
All.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. And we have open lines we can get you on pretty quickly now at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Lauren in Mineral Point wonders if there's anything to the report that our humid weather is partially caused by the increased acreage of corn and soybeans planted close together, thereby causing a great deal more moisture to be produced.
That's true. Now, recently, I'm not sure about the recent weather patterns, but there was a study done by a colleague of mine a couple of years ago that tracked air coming up from the Gulf of Mexico up the Mississippi Valley and into Wisconsin. And much to my surprise, that air gained humidity.
No.
You know, and you would think it's coming off the Gulf. Where's it going to get moisture from? Well, it gets it from the cornfields. So the corns transpire a ton of water into the air. So, yeah, in general, we can blame our a lot of our humid days on corn from other states if we would like to.
And Bob in Greendale says a Wisconsin politician or political candidate thinks that global warming is caused by sunspots. Can you comment not so much on the candidate, but on, would global warming be caused by sunspots? Let's put it that way. And also, how does sunspots affect communications on Earth?
Yeah, I don't know who the candidate is, but he should get a new science advisor. sunspots do affect communications. And we've been in a relatively low sunspot cycle and solar activity, and that's going to be peaking over the next couple of years. And so there is a lot of concern about communications, because a lot of that's done by satellites, and they'll be affected by this high energy output by the sun. But with regard to the recent global warming, no. And in fact, if you look at the energy output of the sun between 2000 and 2010, it's actually decreased. By about 1%. So not a lot, but it's decreased. And so if you're going to then correlate that with a warmer temperature, well, that's of the planet, that's going the wrong way.
Okay.
He's got something wrong. Somebody's got something. I don't know if it's a he or she.
He or she.
Right.
Whoever, they've got something wrong.
They got something wrong.
Can modern technology, this is from Dick, can modern technology sample air temperatures near the surface of oceans or seas in worldwide studies of temperature, global warming, How many data points are monitored continuously? How many are terrestrial points and how many over oceans and seas?
We get a lot of good terrestrial observations, particularly where people live. So our temperatures of the land and the air near the land is really good over land. It's not so good over water because nobody lives there, obviously.
Yeah.
So the best way to get it is to get it from satellites. But it's a hard measurement to make in terms of separating out the ocean skin temperature or the water surface temperature from the air right above it. And we really want to know that separation because that exchange of energy between the air and the ocean is important for both weather and climate. So there are ways people are trying, but those are certainly areas that we can improve.
Karen in Eau Claire wonders, she says in the Eau Claire area, everyone's saying that spring and summer were about 2 weeks early and the plants started blooming about 2 weeks early. I don't know how widespread this phenomena was around the state. I think fairly widespread. Yeah. Now I'm wondering if this will have any effect on fall foliage colors. Will the peaks be similarly earlier or maybe even later? I'm considering a fall foliage tour in New England in October. Do you know anything about the summer there?
You know, boy, that's a good thing because it's a good question. Because there's been a lot of studies looking at the growing season, and that has lengthened. It's starting earlier in the spring, and it's going later into the summer or into the fall. But I'm not aware of anyone who's looked at foliage and when that's been turning out. So that would be an interesting thing to look at. What I tend to do is there are, like in Wisconsin, the Department of Natural Resources actually keeps an outlook for foliage.
Yeah.
I know New York does that too, and Vermont do it because it's a really big tourist attraction. So, you know, I would pick that mean time period. Usually for me, I generally think around October 4th. I don't know why, but that's what I think of. And then, you know, plan around that day.
Michael in Bear Valley. Hello to you.
Hello. Just one last report on the northern Wisconsin lakes, because
okay.
I know it's been
good.
A critical issue up there, but I've been living up there for some 50 years, and it's really been the lowest we've ever seen it. In fact, the report that I got from the Trout Lake Research Center up there, Limnology, is that it's an 80-year low. And I just wanted to clarify one difference between the drainage and the seepage lakes. The drainage lakes, although they look quite high, the seepage lakes are the ones that are tied into the water table. And I did speak to a well driller in the Eagle River last year, and he said the water table was down around 11 to 12 feet in the Eagle River area. central Vilas County. So all those seepage lakes that are connected to the water table are still, you know, down.
Wow.
I know our lake is down close to 30 inches still, but even though it came up 8 inches since May, we're still down 30.
So you're still down. Oh, you're still down about 3 feet.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. Down around 30 inches.
30 inches.
Yeah.
30 inches.
Right, yeah. So it's you know, it's going to take a long time for that water to percolate down into the water table, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought I'd give one more report on it.
Thanks, great, Michael. Great. Appreciate it.
Well, let me give one more report,
okay,
which hopefully is a good news report, and that is that a La Nina is beginning to form. And generally what that means for the Upper Peninsula area, that region, is increased snowfall. So that would be, again, the type of thing that would be helpful for...
Very helpful.
For the water conditions up there. So let's keep our fingers crossed that does come upon.
I can never remember the difference between El Nino and La Nina and how they relate to the jet stream. Is there an easy way to remember that?
I'm trying to think. El Nino usually means that the way that I just remember it, I don't have any handy, you know, rules of thumb. Maybe we can come up with one.
That'd be good.
thanks for calling, Michael. Well, El Nino means what?
Christ Child. That usually means that the tropical Pacific waters get warmer than normal, which leads to a change in convection patterns, which changes the jet stream, so that we don't get a lot of snowfall, a reduced amount of snowfall in northern Wisconsin. And La Nina is the opposite of that. So maybe it's best just to remember one, and then just remember the other one's the opposite.
All right, let's go to Clint and Ladysmith. Clint, hi.
Hello, thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I just have a question for you about wintertime weather, and I guess it pertains to the fact that when I was a kid, I used to play out in the wintertime pretty regularly, didn't have much of a problem with it. However, now that I'm older and it's in the middle of winter, even if it's like 10 degrees outside, which isn't so bad up in Ladysmith, I find it difficult to just even want to go outside and walk my dog, and that's because it seems like the last 5 or 10 years, it's been getting windier outside. And you got to put up with the wind chill. I'm just curious, does your guest have any idea if it's been getting windier lately over the last 5 to 10 years in the wintertime?
Oh.
You know, there was a study that one of our colleagues did over Lake Superior and found that it was getting windier over Lake Superior during the wintertime due to having less ice.
Oh.
So maybe it is, because you set up by Ladysmith, right? So you're pretty close to Lake Superior. Maybe that continued wind may be pushing in. Otherwise, I have no idea.
But that makes some sense.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Clint and Barbara in Milwaukee. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I was just wondering if you have any predictions for what type of winter we might have this year.
Okay.
My predictions for winter, at least based on what the National Weather Service or NOAA actually is putting out, is for La Nina conditions, which means that the upper most northern areas of Wisconsin and Upper Peninsula may get some additional snowfall above average. Other than that, I've only looked into the fall, and they're looking for warmer temperatures than average in the fall and precipitation. They're not so sure what's going to happen with the precipitation.
But we can expect a warmer fall through across Wisconsin?
Throughout all of Wisconsin, yeah. They were predicting above average, yeah.
And so what's the average temperature, fall temperature?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. 40-something, I would probably guess.
40?
You know, when you do daytime highs and nighttime lows, it's probably around 40, mid-40s maybe.
And when are we going to be through the tornado season?
Hopefully, you know, it actually started off as a real gangbuster this year. I mean, we had like 30 tornadoes up until the beginning of July or so.
Thought we were going to rake all kinds of records.
Yeah, and it's fortunately, it's kind of calmed down. And I don't think we've had any in the last month, have we?
No.
Nothing I can think of.
It's been not very much. Yeah. So, well, that's good news. Anyway.
That's good news, right. Yeah, that's slowed down.
Maybe that's the way to end.
That's right.
Good news. You'll come back. Probably John will be back with us through the end of September.
End of September. He may be a little melancholy.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve. Appreciate it very much. Steve Ackerman is director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, of course, a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he, along with John Martin, will be back with us on but it's the last Monday of September. So that's the easy way to remember it. So we'll look forward to that. And tomorrow, look forward to tomorrow as well, personal computer consulting, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison will be our guest. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.